If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the love of the Supreme Self, the All That Is. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Galactic Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is the mind games we play to delay and deny present joy. The mind games we play to delay and deny present joy. So, if you're ready for this, let's go. Let's take a deep breath. Can you call yourself forward in your divine presence and occupy this moment fully? Just be here now. Let everything else just fall away. Take another deep breath and experience that divine effulgence that is your own divinity, centered throughout your whole being. Feel it in your head, your throat, your chest, your hips, your knees, your legs, your feet. Emblazon your entire biosphere that transcends what you think of as your place marker in time and space, i.e. your body, to occupy that space of consciousness that is your expansion of divine beingness. Your world, that which you have colored and peopled with your own thought system, your own beliefs, your own conditioning, that is the only world that you'll ever experience, the one of your own making. So, tonight we're going to be looking at the games that we all play, which delay and deny the full realization of ourselves as divine. There's something that we allow to occupy our focus, our thinking, our speech, our whole presentation, other than the owning of our full divine presence. And we each need to ask ourselves, why? Why do we do that? Why do we delay present wholeness, present holiness, present fullness, present peace? And so we speak about joy, but actually joy falls short of what we really want to look at tonight. English is a language basically of ignorance, sorry to say, but it is. It's all about the world and commerce and the exchange of illusion with illusion to perpetrate more illusion. In an illusory world that you've never, ever truly been in at all, except in your associative imagination and interpretation. So the word that we would want to use here is Param Ananda, complete, absolute, supreme bliss. But it also means that state of unconditional, pure love That's called prema, premananda, the bliss of wholeness that comes when you have expanded to the place that you are divine love, and nothing else is going on. You just simply are that pure divine love. And prashanti, which is ever-expanding peace. Now, we think of peace in the English understanding as, oh, temporary episodes of where things are going the way we want them to go, and we're not presently upset about anything. Rare as that may be. But what we're speaking of is the absence of mental agitation. Whenever the mind is agitated and it's pulling your attention out into places other than the bliss that you are, the wholeness and divine peace that you are, whenever you allow the mind to pull you into otherness, into separation, into states of disquietude of any degree, you are in a state of mental agitation. You're identified with the content of your thought. And thus, you're delaying and denying the present joy. Whenever you are thinking, you're caught in the noose of time. Thought and time and bondage and ignorance all sleep in the same bed of consciousness. So you can live above the agitation of thought when you move into that state of awareness, or we call it also the objective observer. We call it soul transcendence. We call it the true self. We call it presence, being in the now, being the watcher, being in the balcony of your life, looking at you as a performer down on the stage, but not buying into the drama, just watching. And so that's the state that we do spiritual practice to be able to stabilize ourselves at that level, so that we can watch ourselves and not allow ourselves to get lost in the world around us. And there's a knack to that. And like anything, you need to practice. It's very important to realize that what you see is nothing but your own creations. The vision or experience of the world is but a projection of our mind and the reflection of our own inner thoughts. Therefore, the world, being the reflection of our inner thoughts, depends on us for its happiness, its color, its sorrow, its drama, its very existence. So when finally we identify with the immortal divinity that we are, we replace the fear of death with faith in our absolute knowing of our eternal and permanent state of existence. That's called Sat, S-A-T, or existence or truth in Sanskrit. And we eliminate the desire for things by moving into the wisdom of Chit or Chitta, which is the state of awareness of its fullness, of your own fullness, so that you don't have the mental agitation that causes you to reach outside of yourself to fulfill things that you believe in error and ignorance that you lack. But you move rather into the wisdom of knowing the fullness and wholeness and completeness of your own divinity. When that happens, you've moved into Sat Chit Ananda, existence, awareness, and bliss. And for you, the end of the world will have come. There will no longer be a separated individual human self that's caught up in the world of appearances and polar opposites but you will then be identified as the one self that is aware of itself as it has always been, perfect, all-inclusive, and residing in eternal bliss. So this is what we are here to inquire about each week. Each week we look at it again from a different angle, from a different perspective. And I remind you that to be God conscious, to be conscious of God, of yourself as God, requires practice. If you think of these things, oh, maybe once a week, it's unlikely that you're going to feel the immanent presence within and all around you every day, or even be aware of the constant care and the constant overlighting provision that becomes your experiential reality when you move in the presence of God, when you live and move and have your being in God, so that God is above you, below you, to your right, to your left, before you, behind you, within you, breathing you, beating your heart, giving you that sense of intelligence and creativity and love and sentiency that rises within you as a sense of great, great fulfilling joy or ananda and peace and wholeness. When you have that sense with you all the time, you are living in a state of divine realization. You're in the world, but you're no longer of the world. You're a free soul. You can observe things without getting caught up in them. You can watch people act, but realize, oh, these are just embodiments of my own self. This person looks like a separate person, but really, he's simply an image of my own being. And when I look into the mirror of this person, if I see faults in him or her, those are simply reflective of faults that I have within myself. If I see the divine in him or her, that is simply the proof that I am centered in my own divinity. As I am within myself, so I will see that in those around me. So the whole creation down here in these lower worlds that we think we're in, we imagine we're in, we dream that we're in, are reflective. And they simply mirror our own state of consciousness. And they respond to what we place out energetically within that context. So there's like a rebounding and resounding of the energetics that we exercise through our moving through life. It just simply molds itself to outpicture our particular state of consciousness at any given time. So if you only dedicate a small period of time each day to be with, quote, quote, God, then the rest of the time you will not be able to take that very far into your life. It's sort of be like, you know, 10 minutes with God in the morning and the rest of the day with the world. However, if you continuously open your heart and begin to sense this endless flow of grace, if you begin to be caught up in the flow of grace, what is a flow of grace? It means when you have no againstness, anything inside you that is against yourself or against another, you're in a state of grace, which is to say you feel clarity and peace within. You cannot hold a position of adversarial againstness towards yourself or anyone or even the world or the president or what the administration is doing or what's happening in the financial arena or what's happening in Syria or Iran or America or Europe or wherever, whatever. As soon as you position yourself in an adversarial sense of that's not me, that has nothing to do with me, that's them, you're in the illusion of the separated self, which we call the ego mind. You're caught up in that belief system that there's an outside world there that you have to fix or correct or chastise or do something with it. And the world exists nowhere else but in your own mind. The world and everything that you see outside of yourself is simply a mirror of what you have in your own consciousness. See, there's no wiggle room for the ego here. Absolutely none. We have to be very, very clear that the world we see is the world we be. So if you sense that flow of grace, which is another way of saying you feel completely at home and at peace with yourself, your surroundings, the people that flow around you in your world, and when you find yourself in that state of grace, you'll also notice if you pause and turn your attention inside the center of your skull, that you have become absorbed in the inner sound current. That is God's own holy song that's singing within you. That is the name of God. That is the living word. That is the Shabduni. That is the Bani, the Gurbani. That is the divine sound current. And that lets you know that you're totally connected with the supreme absolute, it of itself. That is your true reality. That is the heart of God. That is the center of bliss. That is divine love. That is living in grace. That is being in the world, in God consciousness, and still fulfilling your dharma, your dance, your duty, in the world in a normal way that doesn't look like Looney Tunes. It looks like a very centered, grounded, and loving person. A person that's at peace with him and herself. So, in that very instant, you're a fountain of illumination, and that energy flows forth from your very heart in a fountain that constantly replenishes your energy. Those of you that need more energy need to get more connected to that flow of grace, because it keeps refilling. The proof that you're filled with the whole Spirit or the Holy Spirit or the spirit of your own inner holiness is that you have tremendous spiritual vitality and physical vitality. Your body, your face, everything begins to glow. You feel a vital energy coming out of the auric field of such a person. And then you perform each act, allowing that divine spirit to be the operative through you, which means you don't have to think ahead of time what to say or what to do, because when you're in that present moment, whatever you need to do and say is sourced through you by that which is greater than that which is in the world. That greater isness will source through you. And when that happens, it's done perfectly. God is served, the world is served, your boss is served, your friends are served, your family are served, your children are served. Everyone wins when you allow the spirit of your own wholeness to operate through you, which we call the Holy Spirit. So that is when you actually transcend the need to pray or do spiritual exercises or meditate or do intercessory prayer. You have become that person who prays without ceasing, who is truly, truly worshiping God in spirit and in truth, who is truly the Anointed One, was truly the Christ that has exited the closet of human limitation and conditioned belief systems. You're out, and you've been outed by your own bliss. Now, many people find it extremely difficult to remain unaffected by the world. And they'll just get up from their daily spiritual practice and or they'll return to their homes after a spiritual retreat or being in Prashanti Nilayam, the ashram of Sai Baba. And they just re-enter the world and get caught up in the same rapid tracks, the same mental patterns of agitation that they went on the retreat or they went on the vacation or they went to the ashram to get rid of in the first place. And by getting caught up again in their old familiar patterns, they lose the continuity of their contact with the whole spirit or the Holy Spirit that lives in you as you. And that is to say, they lose their sense of peace. So by becoming involved with worldly matters, you get attached to and entrained in trying to gratify the demands of your senses. The senses are never going to be appeased. They can only be filled by your own holiness. When you are in the sense of divine wholeness, then everything you do is maximal. You have absolute ecstatic experience in the moment with whatever it is you're engaging. Whether you're eating or making love or having a conversation or walking in the park or just riding in a car and just blissed out of your mind because of the magnificent beauty of the scenery as you drive. All of that is the product of being fully present here and now without attachment, without need, without lack, without trying to gratify something that you feel you have to reach into the world to draw to yourself. That will never fill you or fulfill you or make you happy. That is where you're allowing the mind games to delay and deny your present joy, your present wholeness. So getting involved with the world is where you get caught up in the daily pressures of your job, of the meeting the expectations and demands of your family or your boss or whomever or whatever, and losing that alert state of mind that's essential for being able to stay present in the moment and to react appropriately within the moment. The Holy Spirit is always in the moment. It tells you what to say when the word is needed. So you take a deep breath and you attune before you speak. It lets you know the right thing to do in the moment. But if you allow your mind to run on ahead to where you think you're going, having no guarantee that you'll ever arrive there, bear in mind, you don't know when you start out on a journey that you're actually going to arrive. So you have to stay present with the journey, or you're not going to be a good and attentive driver, and you may not arrive at your destination, at least physically. But when you allow the mind to take you out of the present joy of the wholeness of this present moment in God, with God, as God, you're trying to condition and set up what you're going to experience when you arrive. You're already letting your ego, your thinking mind, to mess with your future, trying to manipulate the world and the outcome in the world to suit you. To please you. To please what? The ego. That is one of the mind games that we play that delays and denies present joy. When you're in that agitation of trying to change the world to please you, you're in the ego. Because the self is ever pleased, ever whole, ever full, ever sufficient. And it lives in a state of absolute quiescent peace, which doesn't try to manipulate outcome. manipulation, control, stress, effort, trying to make things come out a certain way, those are all the actions of a person who is in the mode of ignorance, caught up in the ego mind. So it's a very, well, they call it a razor's edge, this path of being in the world and not of it. You don't deny the world. You simply see the world for what it is. It's a reflection of your state of consciousness. You are to use it only for that until you see only God. Only God. Only God. I mean it literally, only God. Forget everything else. Everything else. And keep bringing your mind, keep bringing your emotions, keep bringing your attention back to one thought alone. God alone is. God is. And I am God. So we delay and deny present joy by getting caught up in the daily news. When you focus on the news, which constantly repeats in a circle, in case you haven't noticed, I find it interesting to read newspapers that are 50, 60, 70 years old and see that they have the same, almost identical headlines. Things don't change very much. We go from war to war, conflict to conflict, because that's what the ego mind does. It wants to delay and deny present joy, because the ego cannot function in joy, can't even comprehend joy. If I say instead present divinity, present peace, present wholeness, present love, all those are the same things. They mean the same exact things. We deny the presence of God here and now when we distract ourselves by thinking that watching the news, for example, is going to add some quality to our life. Well, watch the next time that you're caught up watching the news or ranting about what the government is doing or this is doing or that's doing. Observe whether or not you're experiencing ananda, bliss, peace, the awareness of your own divinity. That should immediately let you know that you've allowed the ego mind to draw you again into illusion. And you see, we do that life after life after life, and we've spent so many lifetimes confessing that we are human with limitations, we're only human, it's only human to err, I'm faulty, I'm a sinner, I'm a Christian, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a whatever, I'm a New Ager, I'm a commander, I'm a whatever. We keep putting all these labels that none of those have anything to do whatsoever with who we truly are. And we keep adding more to that life after life after life. And those are called karmic grooves or vrittis or samskaras. And they're like scars in our inner mind. They're like, you know, habitual patterns of thinking and relating and defining ourselves. And if you haven't had very many lifetimes of self-inquiry, you come in pretty burdened down. And that's why you need the help of an enlightened master and a really good spiritual path to enable you to extricate yourself. It's very hard to do without someone who has already gotten to that place themselves and can give you some guidelines. And that's why we are led when we need that teacher the Master is made available to us. But then we have to have the wit to choose the Master and stay on the path and do the spiritual regimen that that Master prescribes. Sai Baba calls this what we're suffering from, birth and death disease. We believe that we're born, and we live, and we believe that we die. But Baba said we have never been born, nor can we ever die or cease to be. And we've never been here in any real sense at all. Baba says that we are to think like this. For so many lives, you've been declaring that you are human with limitations. I'm faulty. I'm so-and-so. That's wrong. Now say, I am God. Never feel or say that you're anything other than God. Then you will show godly qualities, and you will have godly powers, and you will be God. Thoughts? If there are no thoughts, there are no actions. No actions, no thoughts, no world. So that's the thing, is to remember that there is no world. There's a beautiful letter, I'm going to read it to you now, that Sai Baba sent to Dr. John Hislop, who was a very, very great devotee of Sai Baba, and that I knew as a personal friend. And he was the one that Sai Baba materialized the crucifix for out of two twigs that he blew upon. And he manifested this beautiful, Baba said, exact replica of how Jesus appeared at the moment of his death. And he said that he had to blow upon these two twigs that he had picked off of, or Hislop had picked off of a bush at his guidance, at Baba's guidance. And Baba had held them up in the form of the cross. And he said, what is this, Hislop? And Hislop said, well, Swami, it's a cross. And he blew on it three times. And he said that all of the wood of the original cross of the crucifixion had completely dematerialized back into the atoms. So he actually had to call forth from the unmanifest the atoms and reconstruct the actual wood of that crucifix. And it was small, I guess, about less than 4 inches, about 3 inches tall, this cross, which I was privileged to hold. And it shows Jesus at the moment that he died, and he did actually die on the cross, he did actually resurrect his physical body from death, according to Baba. And his body's very thin because Jesus said that they not only put him in prison, but they starved him for over a week. He had no food, and they did what they did to him. And so when you look at the silver figure, you see little bumps all over it. And Dr. Hislop asked what the bumps were. And Jesus said at the moment of death, the body was in such bad condition that the blood had coagulated in the veins. And that was what caused the little bumps to be all over the figure. And Baba said that Jesus did not suffer at all during the crucifixion, because he was a highly developed, God-conscious yogi and was able to withdraw his whole identification from the body and hold it at that higher level. And then also to experience, although it was impossible, he actually went through the experience of what caused the formation of our belief that we have a separate self, where we felt separate from God. And that's when he said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? For just a moment, he had to experience consciously and bridge that abyss of terror, which Baba says we keep reliving again and again and again in what appears to us to be the outer world. We're reliving that original terror of that split second of believing that we were separate from God, which, of course, is impossible. It's a whole illusion. And then from that illusion, this whole Maya that we think of as the real world then manifested. So anyway, I wanted to read you what he said to Dr. Hyslop when Dr. Hyslop was asking about the world and the terrible things going on in the world. In fact, it sounds like today, you know, what you'd hear today on the news. But here he was writing back in the 1970-something. This is the letter that Baba wrote with his own handwriting to Dr. Hyslop and his wife. My dears, the time will come when the whole of this dream will vanish. To every one of us there must come a time when the whole universe will be found to have been a mere dream, when we shall find that the soul is infinitely better than the surroundings. In this struggle through what we call environments, there will come a time when we shall find that these environments were almost zero in comparison with the power of the soul. It is only a question of time, and time is nothing in the infinite. It is a drop in the ocean. We can't afford to wait and be calm. With blessings, Sri Satya Sai Baba. Dr. Hyslop was very blessed to have had many, many handwritten notes and letters from Sai Baba. So the mind is what has made up the entire world. No thoughts, no mind, no world. And the minute you think of something, the form will appear in your dream, whether it's a night dream or this life in the daytime that you think of as waking is actually another dream. So to stop the world is to transcend the process of thought. Bear in mind, thought and awareness are two different things. Now, you don't become a person with no ability to think and reason and have logic and function in the world when you're enlightened. It's just that you don't allow the mind to draw you into attachment and bondage by identifying with states that are passing and conditions that are passing. You don't project that way. But when you need to think and plan and exercise judgment in your daily affairs and your business and your bookkeeping or whatever it is, you find that without indulging in the ego's tendency to pull you into distraction and denial, when you stay present and aware, you find you have tremendous clarity and thought power. This is how Einstein functioned. His greatest desire was to know how God thinks. That was what he was interested in. He wanted to know how God thought. And so when he wanted an answer, he would lie down and take a what we would call a power nap, and he would leave his body, and he would go up into the higher dimensional planes, and he would get guidance at a higher level. He would go to the Astral Museum, and he would look at the inventions there. He would discourse with some of the greater souls that had insight into some of the things that he was trying to understand and articulate. And then after 10, 15 minutes, he'd come back with the answer to his scientific inquiry, his equation, whatever it was. So he would constantly leave the world to go into that deeper part of himself that had that divine knowing. And of course, you create on the other side your reality that you believe you're going to have when you go on the other side. So he created a reality in which he met with other scientists and went to the astral library and so forth. So again, the mind creates both the state that we live in here and the state that we live in when we're out of the body in our dreams or in the final departure from this particular episode of life, this chapter of life, in what we call death. And then we create the world that we believe that actually matches our reality and is very much the quintessential subtotal of all of our thoughts and occupations mentally and emotionally during the life that we have just exited. So that's why people find themselves in different states after they leave the body. That's why it's important if you haven't done so beforehand, you better really, really focus in on prioritizing spending time with God if you're getting up in years, because you want to have the thought of God when you leave your body so that you'll go to the highest state that you possibly can. So the lower ego mind is transcended by proper meditation, which causes you to lose awareness of being locked in a body in time. When you transcend the mind and the body, you go into timelessness, which is another form of that bliss. And because the mind and time and the body are all connected. And so you go into that transcendental state of soul awareness, and you rest in God, and then you come back into your body. And hopefully you can suffuse your life with greater peace and greater equanimity and greater joy. And that way you know you have meditated well, and you're progressing. Because joy and peace are the proof that you are in fact progressing in your spiritual enlightenment. So, has it not occurred to you how instantly you manifest the state of consciousness you claim with your spoken words? You know, you say you feel great or strong or healthy, and you do. When I went to work for Dr. Arnold Meyerowitz, a chiropractor, a chiropractic office, one of the first things he showed us was the power that we have over our body. And he brought people forward and asked them what they were experiencing in their body. And if they said, oh, you know, this doesn't feel right or that doesn't feel right, when he would muscle test that organ, sure enough, they would get really weak. And then he said, now I want you to say my stomach is functioning perfectly. I have perfect digestion. I feel great. And they would say that. And that same organ that had tested weak a few minutes ago was suddenly strong. So that was a very graphic example of how we instantly manifest according to the words we speak. Haven't you noticed that when you say, I feel great, and you know, I really feel strong and healthy, that you immediately begin to sense vitality and energy? Have you also noticed that when you say, oh, I feel really sick, I feel bad today, how immediately your whole demeanor drops, your whole energy field drops, and you begin to feel ill? Have you ever felt energy by complaining how exhausted you are? Well, have you? Of course not. You are an embodiment of the living word of God, which means whatever you speak, the universe has to reflect a manifestation in alignment with your words, because you're the only creature in all of creation that has been given the ability to speak as God. Yes, you speak as God, whether you're totally identified with the ego and you're speaking nonsense, which most of us are most of the time, or you're speaking divine truth. It was funny, I was at a meeting the other day and somebody came up and said, how are you? And before I had a chance to think, I said, divine. And the person next to me said, wow, that's the first time I've actually heard somebody speak the absolute truth. But you see, it was spontaneous for me because I practice this all the time. I practice this all the time. And what you practice comes immediately to mind and out your mouth when, you know, you're in a situation like that. And it just came up. You know, I didn't even have to think about it. How are you? Divine. I'm divine. Now, they had said, well, how does your body feel? Then I would have had a choice to say, well, the body's experiencing such and such, but I'm not a body. I'm not a body. I'm not focused into bodiness. I'm focused into who I am, and I am divine. So it doesn't mean that you're in denial, but you're not fooled. You're not bamboozled into thinking that you are a body. Now, many people say that they want to be happy. But if you listen to them talking, they're just shooting air. They don't really want to be happy, because when you really want something, you will do whatever it takes to have it. It's the nature of us. If you want something and you're serious, you're going to find a way to get it. For example, have you ever felt truly joyful after declaring you're depressed? Or abundant after you've just confessed lack? Of course not. You have just confessed with your statement that you're depressed, or that you can't afford whatever. And, you know, this could be anything other than your blissful wholeness. But with your words, you have just demonstrated your ability to instantly manifest whatsoever you lay claim to as your state of consciousness. You know, you say, you're happy, and you are. Or you say, I'm in love, and you are. So begin to pay a little bit of attention to what's coming out of your mouth. Because there's no reason to keep doing this to yourself, and to others, and to the world, because what you do to yourself, you're doing to everyone. Because everyone is yourself. So by laying claim to depression or anger or poverty or whatever, didn't you notice how your entire energy field and experience shifted to outpicture your statement? You instantly felt depressed or angry, or even more poor and lacking. And the more you think of something, the more you'll feel and experience it. Pay attention. Pay attention. Did you ever stop and catch yourself before you make such false statements? No, probably not, if you're still allowing yourself to entertain depression or anger or lack and poverty, or whatever. You have to keep reminding yourself, I am not a physical body. I am not my emotional moods. I am not my thoughts. I am not my personality. I am not my basic self. I am not an ego or a lower self. I am God. So this is the insanity of the ego mind, the false self. It's absolutely obsessed with confessing the false appearances of things, of lack and limitation and neediness, while expecting you to believe that you really want happiness and joy and abundance. No, you don't. You don't. You really don't. Or you'd be focusing on that. So at least don't kid yourself, or worse, lie and play false to yourself. For you're playing the mental games of the ego by allowing it to dictate your reality. And there is a part of you that believes that you're not responsible for creating your life experience. When you do that, you're hoping God or someone is going to come and change things for you so that you won't have to take responsibility. Like presto, change-o. Like maybe you'll win the lottery and suddenly you'll be rich. Or Nisara will pay. Or you'll ascend and get out of here. Where are you going to go? That you're not in yourself and with your own thoughts and your beliefs and the world of your own creation. Where are you going to go? Who are you? What are you? Where are you? So, you know the drill. Surely, you who listen to these seminars week after week have awakened at least to where you can catch yourself in mid-ego stride and opt for a more conscious choice. Surely you have, haven't you? Isn't it time to drop the charade and at least be honest with yourself? It's true, we do have eternity. We are God. You know, we're entirely here as long as we want to be, okay? But Baba has clearly told us that we seem to be enjoying this game of pretending like we're fallible human beings. So much to the point that we're reluctant to give it up. It's become a really bad habit that we've become attached to. Worse than heroin. Worse than crack cocaine. We're addicted to living in sadness. And sorrow, and pain, and lack, and less than our fullness. So haven't you heard over and over from every spiritual teacher on and off the planet that you create your own reality? That you create whatever it is you give your attention and energy to? You create by your choice of focus, and through your thought patterns. And what you speak about, and what you identify with. And that forms your reality. So you are manifesting the life you created right now for yourself. Are you experiencing depression? Well, quit claiming and owning it by talking about it, complaining about it, and telling everybody and their dog about it, and thinking about it, and being in that expression of depression. Change your channel. Get up and move your body physically. 99% of the time, people are depressed because they isolate and they sit around and they don't participate in their life. So at least get up and move, and preferably run or walk briskly out in nature. Watch a lighthearted, inspiring film. Call a friend and cheer them up. See who you can give something to. Depression is a very self-focused, selfish state. So see who you can make feel better. And in that process, you'll forget yourself and you'll begin to feel happier. You know, whenever you do something for another person, the reward is instant sense of happiness and joy. Always feels good to give to someone. Or read A Course in Miracles or something uplifting, but preferably get up and move and start participating physically with your life. Get involved in your life. And work it. Work it. Make your life work for you by identifying what keeps you positively aligned, energized, and happy. This isn't something you can be passive and expect any changes. You're going to have to really make some effort if you want to shift out of these old patterns that are going to keep you here life after life after life, unless that's, of course, what you want. So the number one discipline you're going to need to practice if you want to be happy, peaceful, and abundant, and healthy or whatever, is to cease thinking and talking about the opposite. Just stop it. Only you can do this. It's called exercising conscious awareness and self-discipline. And, most of all, you must quit lying. Stop spreading lies about yourself and others. Sai Baba, Jesus, as well as every God-realized master has said that you are divine. You are made in the image and likeness of God, that you are God, no different than God, that you are perfect, whole, and holy. Why don't you just settle with that for your belief? Take it on faith. Take it on faith. Keep reminding yourself that until you begin to pattern after that rather than the story you've been allowing yourself to believe that's coming from the inner liar, the false self. So keep focusing on the fact that I am a mortal spirit. I am ever full and free. I am not a body. I remain as God created me. I am as God created me. And realize that you already are everything that you desire to be right now. You don't have to grow into it, evolve into it, have some magic wand waved over you. You only need to come into agreement with that as your reality rather than the lies of the ego self. So every time you lay claim to any state less than your divine wholeness and holiness, you are lying. And those strong words are chosen on purpose, as most of us take offense at being accused of being a liar. That's very offending and offensive to us. So you will remember whatever leaves a strong impression. So at least quit lying to yourself when you say you want to be happy and then spend all of your time complaining about and criticizing everything and everyone in sight. You don't want to be happy. You prefer criticizing and complaining. So at least admit that to yourself and don't fool yourself by saying that you want to be happy or that you want to realize God. And don't expect to experience God consciousness as long as you keep identifying yourself as being, quote, only human. Hello. Never has Jesus, Sai Baba, nor any other God-realized master ever told you that you were only human. Sai Baba has stated quite emphatically that you are not human. You are God. You are God, and that is the only truth about you that you need to own and identify with. And not only are you God, everyone and everything you see is a manifestation of God. God alone is all that is. And anything else is something you've projected out of your mental imagination and has only the apparent reality, like a mirage or a magician's conjured illusion that you've given it. So in the dark, a garment hanging on the door can appear to be a ghost or a boogeyman. But once you've turned on the light, you can see it for what it is. Likewise, all of these weird misassociations and all of these fears and anxieties and doubts and phobias will simply vanish when you turn on your own inner light of divine awareness. So it's up to you, my beloveds. And I'm listening, too. I always teach in a way that I can learn something from the Holy Spirit, who's actually doing these seminars. And I also keep reminding myself, none of this ever happened. I remain in God, ever whole, ever perfect, ever free, and perfect divine bliss. So let's go out chanting three shantis, which is the energy of peace. Deep breath. Bye.